Hello everyone, I'm delighted to be with you today to discuss the regulatory enforcement and disciplinary actions of the Stock Exchange and the SFC, which took place between January to April 2022. Today I'm going to consider various enforcement cases of the Stock Exchange and the SFC, with the aim of giving you an understanding and awareness of the enforcement areas and the breaches which the Exchange and the SFC have been focusing on during the first 4 months of 2022. I'll begin today by giving you an overview of the trends of disciplinary and enforcement actions conducted by the Exchange and the SFC between January and April 2022. I'll then look at the key disciplinary and enforcement cases which took place during the same period and dive into each of these cases by discussing their key facts and findings and the corresponding bases and rationale of the disciplinary and enforcement actions. During the period from January to April 2022, we saw that the Stock Exchange, as the frontline regulator of Hong Kong listed companies, had been enforcing the Stock Exchange listing rules and the directors' Form B undertaking by conducting enforcement actions targeting corporate misconduct or misgovernance, internal control failures, and anti-money laundering. We also noticed that when the Stock Exchange considered potential breaches, it would not merely focus on the problematic events, but would delve deeper and investigate the issuer's internal controls and also the steps taken by individual directors for discharging their responsibilities in respect of internal controls. The Stock Exchange may take disciplinary action if there's been a failure in respect of internal control, even if the Stock Exchange ultimately establishes that the matter causing it to initiate its investigation involved no breach or misconduct. Having regard to the enforcement actions by the SFC, they've been demonstrating a change to the regulatory enforcement atmosphere by increasingly using civil tools and remedies rather than criminal prosecution to achieve enforcement outcomes against licensed individuals and corporations. We've also seen from the recent SFC actions that it's been focusing on larger and more impactful cases involving large-scale licensed corporations and imposing sanctions with a notable amount of fines. From these cases, the SFC leveraged its sanctioning tools of reprimand and fines whilst initiating proceedings in the Market Misconduct Tribunal, the MMT, to achieve its enforcement objectives. So let me begin by considering the enforcement cases in January 2022. The first case I'm going to talk about is the SFC reprimanding and fining Junhui International Futures Company Limited for $5 million Hong Kong for its failure to comply with anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing requirements and breach of its cybersecurity guidelines. The SFC's investigation found that between May 2017 and July 2018, Junhui, a company licensed under the SFO, the Securities and Futures Ordinance, to carry on Type 2 dealing in futures contracts regulated activity, had failed to conduct adequate due diligence on the customer-supplied systems used by its clients for placing orders. Customer-supplied systems are trading software platforms developed for use by clients to conduct electronic trading through the internet on mobile phones and other electronic channels. Junhui therefore failed to properly assess and manage the money laundering, terrorist financing, and other risks associated with clients' use of customer-supplied systems before allowing them to connect with its broker-supplied system. The SFC also identified that Junhui had failed to take reasonable steps to establish the true and full identity and ultimate beneficial owners of eight clients who authorized multiple third parties to place orders for their accounts. Junhui also failed to make proper inquiries before approving the relevant client requests to set up third-party operated accounts. The SFC further found that Junhui had failed to put in place an effective ongoing monitoring system, which led to its failure to detect the unusual money movements in three client accounts between January and August 2018, and more than 1,000 instances of self-matched trades in two client accounts between March and May 2018. In self-matched trades, clients' orders are matched with their own orders in the opposite direction, creating the illusion of trading and thus indicating market manipulation. The SFC considered that Zhang Hui's conduct breached the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing ordinance, the SFC's guidance on anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing, and the SFC code of conduct. In addition, the SFC found that Zhang Hui had failed to implement two-factor authentication for clients to log into their internet trading accounts using its customer-supplied systems for a period of 6 months in 2018, in breach of the SFC's cybersecurity guidelines on two-factor authentication requirements, which took effect in April 2018. In order to send a strong deterrent to the market, pursuant to Section 194 of the SFO, the SFC reprimanded and fined Zhang Hui $5 million Hong Kong dollars for its failure to comply with the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing ordinance and other regulatory requirements, together with suspending the company's responsible officer and executive director at the material time for 7 months for his failure to discharge his duties as a responsible officer, and ensuring that the company maintained appropriate standards of conduct and procedures to properly manage the risks associated with its business operations. The second case that I'm going to talk about is the SFC's action against Tianhe Chemicals Group Limited and its executive director for false or misleading IPO prospectus. On the 9th of June 2014, Tianhe Chemicals Group Limited issued its prospectus for its IPO on the stock exchange, which raised net proceeds of approximately 3.52 billion Hong Kong dollars. It was subsequently revealed in the SFC's investigation that about 53% of Tianhe's total track record revenue of 12.6 billion RMB disclosed in the prospectus was overstated. Tianhe and Wei, who was the chief executive officer and substantial shareholder, were considered to be reckless or negligent as to whether the information stated in Tianhe's prospectus was false or misleading as to a material fact, or was misleading or false through the omission of a material fact. The SFC's action under the MMT was brought pursuant to Section 277 of the SFO, and it was found by MMT that the company's prospectus overstated its revenue for its track record period of the financial years from 2011 to 2013 by over 6.7 billion RMB. The SFC suspended trading in Tianhe's shares in May 2017 under Section 8 of the Securities and Futures Stock Market Listing Rules, and the shares were delisted by the stock exchange in June 2020 following delay in the publication of results of Tianhe and the subsequent resignation of its auditors. Considering Section 277 of the SFO, it provides that liability arises where a person discloses, circulates, or disseminates false or misleading information which is likely to induce subscription, sale, or purchase of securities or dealings in futures, or increase, reduce, maintain, or stabilize price, and the person knows or is reckless or negligent as to whether it's false or misleading. Such liability extends to the people who authorize or are concerned in the disclosure, circulation, or dissemination of false or misleading information. The Market Misconduct Tribunal was satisfied that the IPO prospectus contained materially false or misleading information regarding Tianhe's revenues and profits, and made certain orders against Tianhe providing such materially false or misleading information, including disqualifying Mr. Wei Xuan, a former substantial shareholder and CEO of Tianhe, from being a director and being involved in the management of a listed company for 4 years. Tianhe and Mr. Wei Xuan were ordered to pay the Hong Kong government and SFC costs, and Mr. Wei Xuan was further ordered not to engage in any conduct which would constitute market misconduct. In addition, the action conducted in the MMT, the SFC sought orders from the Court of First Instance under Section 213 of the SFO to restore all public shareholders to the position before their subscriptions or purchases of Tianhe's shares. These actions taken by the SFC demonstrate its proactive steps in bringing legal action against listed companies and their directors in the event of any findings of market misconduct. The directors of a listing applicant should ensure, of course, that all the information provided in the prospectus is true, accurate, and complete. Otherwise, they could be held fully responsible for the misleading information which is contained in the prospectus. I'll now consider the case regarding the SFC's reprimand and a $348 million Hong Kong dollar fine on Citigroup Markets Asia Limited for its serious regulatory breaches over client facilitation activities. Citigroup Global Markets Asia Limited, which is licensed under the SFO for various regulated activities, was found by the SFC to have allowed various trading desks under its cash equities business to send mislabeled indications of interest to its clients when there was no actual genuine client interest or specific client that Citigroup was in touch with. An indication of interest is a form of advertisement or representation made by a licensed corporation to clients to source potential clients with an interest in trading. From reviewing sample facilitation trades executed by the Citigroup trading desks between January 2014 and December 2018, the SFC found that the desk heads and traders were involved in certain actions constituting misrepresentation and non-disclosure breaches under the SFC Code of Conduct in the course of sending mislabeled indications of interest to its clients, including making express misrepresentations to clients by giving factually incorrect information or concealing the principal nature of the trades, making misleading statements that led clients to misinterpret trades as being executed on an agency basis, or in some cases remained silent, notwithstanding some indication of the client's incorrect belief that the trades were agency trades, and or remained silent or were not explicit with clients about the involvement of the facilitation desk and failed to obtain client's consent before routing the client's orders to the facilitation desk for execution. Further, the SFC also found that the prevalence of the dishonest behavior among the trading desks over more than 10 years indicated serious and systemic lapses among Citigroup's governance and controls framework, which had particularly failed to put in place any policies or controls to guide and monitor the issue of certain indications of interest, to have and enforce adequate internal guidelines on pre-trade disclosure of and obtaining client consent for facilitation trades, and implementing effective compliance monitoring in respect of facilitation activities. The SFC considered that the internal control failures breached the SFC Code of Conduct, as well as the management supervision and internal control guidelines for persons licensed by or registered with the SFC. Again, pursuant to Section 194 of the SFO, the SFC reprimanded Citigroup and fined it 348.25 million Hong Kong dollars for its serious regulatory breaches and internal control failures, and was initiating disciplinary proceedings against its former senior management. After considering some key enforcement cases of the SFC in January 2022, I'm going to move on to the enforcement actions in February 2022, and I'll begin by looking at the stock exchange action against Beijing Media Corporation Limited. Between January 2018 and March 2019, Beijing Media, through its subsidiaries, provided 13 loans totaling 333.2 million RMB to its controlling shareholder, which constituted advances to an entity under Chapter 13 of the listing rules, and 7 loans totaling 220 million RMB to its associate, constituting major and connected transactions under Chapters 14 and 14A of the listing rules. It's notable that some of these loans did not have written agreements. The stock exchange found that Beijing Media failed to comply with Chapters 13, 14, and 14A of the listing rules by failing to announce and disclose in its financial results the details of the loans to its controlling shareholders, failing to comply with the announcement circular, independent shareholders' approval and reporting requirements for the loans, and failing to enter into the written agreements for 2 of the controlling shareholder loans, which were connected transactions. The exchange also identified deficiencies in the internal control systems of Beijing Media, which failed to implement relevant internal controls at the subsidiary level, while relevant staff lacked the requisite knowledge in relation to the reporting of transactions under the listing rules. The stock exchange further found that the relevant directors breached Rule 308F of the listing rules and their directors' undertakings by failing to ensure the company maintained adequate and effective internal controls. Based on the breaches I've mentioned, the Stock Exchange directed the 17 former and existing directors of Beijing Media to attend 24 hours of training on regulatory and legal topics, including listing rules compliance. The Stock Exchange further imposed a prejudice to investors' interest statement, a PII statement, against three former directors of the company who had failed to cooperate with the investigation of the exchange by stating that had any of these three directors remained on the board of directors of the company, their retention of office would have been prejudicial to the interests of investors. This case demonstrates that where there are breaches involving failure of establishing or maintaining effective internal controls, the Stock Exchange places its focus on the individuals, including the listed company's directors and senior management, as the exchange understands good or bad corporate governance ultimately rests in the hands of these individuals. Everything starts from the top. If directors fail to discharge their duties on internal control systems, they risk being publicly sanctioned. The next SFC case I'm going to talk about, in which the SFC reprimanded and fined South China Commodities Limited $4.8 million for regulatory breaches, involved an SFC investigation which found that South China, a company licensed under the SFO to carry on Type 2 regulated activity between June 2017 and October 2018, had failed to conduct any due diligence on the customer-supplied systems used by its clients for placing orders, conduct proper inquiries and assessments of deposits made into various client accounts which were not commensurate with the relevant client's declared financial profiles, and put in place an effective ongoing monitoring system to detect suspicious trading patterns in client accounts, which resulted in the company's failure to detect more than 3,000 self-matched trades in 9 client accounts. The SFC considered that these failures indicated the inadequacy and ineffectiveness of the systems and controls of South China Commodities Limited for ensuring compliance with the AML and CFT ordinance and the guideline and the SFC code of conduct. Under section 194 of the SFO, the SFC reprimanded South China and fined it 4.8 million Hong Kong dollars for its failures to comply with AML and CFT, that's counter terrorist financing, and other regulatory requirements. The next case is an SFC enforcement case where an interim injunction order was granted by the Court of First Instance against individuals involved in insider dealing, earning a profit of 12.9 million from innocent investors under a civil proceeding brought by the SFC under Section 213 of the SFO. In September 2016, the SFC commenced such proceedings under Section 213 of the SFO against Yik Fong Fong, who was the Executive Director and CEO of Chinese Energy Holdings Limited, a Hong Kong-listed company, and two of her associates, Ms. Wei Juan, being Ms. Yik's niece, and Mr. Huang Yi, who is Ms. Wei's husband. In the case, Mr. Huang falsely claimed to be an investment consultant of a securities investment firm in China, and the three of them engaged in insider dealing in the shares of Tele I Holdings Limited, which is now known as Circutech International Holdings Limited, earning a profit of 12.9 million from investors. Under Section 213 of the SFO, the SFC is allowed to apply for an injunction or restraining or remedial orders from the Court of First Instance in situations where a person has contravened any of the relevant provisions of the SFO. The Court of First Instance, in this case, granted an interim injunction order against Ms. Yik to freeze her assets up to the value of 25.9 million in January 2017, and also ordered Ms. Wei and Mr. Huang to pay a total of 12.9 million into the court for the purposes of preventing the disposal of assets until judgment could be obtained. In February 2022, the Court of First Instance finally ordered Ms. Yik, Ms. Wei, and Mr. Huang to collectively pay 12.9 million Hong Kong dollars. The illicit profits of their insider dealing in the shares of Circutech to 63 investors to restore them as far as possible to the position they would have been in had the illicit transactions not taken place. This case indicates the broad effect of the orders granted under Section 213 of the SFR to restore innocent investors who transacted with Ms. Wei and Mr. Huang to their pre-transaction positions to the extent possible. The innocent investors had no means to detect they were dealing with Ms. Wei and Mr. Huang, who were engaged in insider dealing. Now, I'll consider some more enforcement actions which took place in March 2022. First, the Stock Exchange took disciplinary action against former directors of a Chapter 21 listed investment company, National Investments Fund Limited, or I'll refer to as National Investments, for misuse of the company's funds. As a Chapter 21 listed company, National Investments' primary investment objective is achieving short to medium term capital appreciation by investing in listed and unlisted companies, mainly in Hong Kong and the PRC. The company's board is responsible for approving investment decisions, formulating the company's investment objectives and policies, and supervising the company's investment manager, which undertook all investment and management duties subject to the investment policies devised by the board. National Investments recorded a loss in each of the years between 2011 and 2018, except in 2012, and incurred net operating cash outflows and net investing cash outflows in most of the years, but in that period. Notably, the company's cash and bank balance dropped from 59 million Hong Kong dollars in 2011 to just 100,000 Hong Kong dollars in 2018. Between 2011 and 2015, National Investments Fund Limited spent over 61 million Hong Kong dollars acquiring luxury assets, including a 24.5 million yacht, a 20 million diamond, and cars worth over 8 million Hong Kong dollars. From the facts, the acquisitions were made at a time when the company's financial position was significantly deteriorating, and they were not in line with the company's investment objectives. The acquisitions of the luxury assets were approved by Mr. Wong, the chairman and sole substantial shareholder of National Investments, from 2010 to 2018 without convening a board meeting. Mr. Wong also approved the monthly financial update sent by the company's chief financial officer to its directors. He submitted that these investments were needed for meeting investments as alternative investment opportunities and to enhance the company's image and reputation. The company disposed of the yacht in 2014 and the diamond in 2018, incurring losses of 4.5 million and 4 million respectively. In 2019, National Investments Fund Limited announced a connected transaction involving a disposal of luxury assets to Mr. Wong, who had resigned a few days prior to the announcement. National Investments claimed that the disposal was made in settlement of a loan it owed to Mr. Wong, and it booked a loss of almost 6.2 million Hong Kong dollars in respect of the assets or investments. The other directors approved National Investment Fund Limited's monthly announcements of its net asset value per share required under Stock Exchange Listing Rule 21.12.3. Their approval was given by written resolution following their receipt of monthly financial updates from the CFO, which set out, amongst other things, the value of non-current assets, a breakdown of individual asset items, payments made, and the total value of other tangible assets. Stock Exchange Listing Rule 308 requires listed company directors to fulfill fiduciary duties and duties of skill, care, and diligence to a standard at least commensurate with the standard established by Hong Kong law. Directors are also required to act honestly and in good faith in the interests of the company as a whole, act for a proper purpose, be answerable to the company for the application or misapplication of its assets, and apply the degree of skill, care, and diligence as may reasonably be expected of a person of their knowledge and experience and holding office within the company. Pursuant to Appendix 5B to the Stock Exchange Listing Rules, directors also undertake, in their undertaking to the Stock Exchange, to comply to the best of their ability with the exchange's listing rules, cooperate with any investigation conducted by the exchange, and update their contact details in a timely manner. The exchange's listing committee found that Mr. Wong, as the former chairman and chief executive director, breached his fiduciary duties and duties of skill, care, and diligence under the exchange's listing rule 308 in approving National Investments Fund Limited's acquisition of luxury assets. He also failed to address or did not care about their suitability, necessity, and the benefit to National Investment Fund Limited as a whole with regard to at least its business nature, its investment objectives and policies, the utilization of the assets by its employees, the company's financial performance at the material time, the estimated market value of the ring and the paintings, and the benefit the company would derive from the assets. Mr. Wong also breached his undertaking to comply with the stock exchange listing rules to the best of his ability. Although the other directors claimed that they were not involved in the acquisition of the various luxury items, they were found to have breached their fiduciary and directors' duties under Stock Exchange Listing Rule 308 in failing to take an active interest in National Investments affairs and to follow up on untoward matters coming to their attention in relation to National Investment Fund Limited's purchase of luxury assets, given the company's financial situation. They also breached their undertakings to comply with the stock exchange listing rules to the best of their ability. Mr. Liu also breached his undertaking to cooperate in any stock exchange investigation by failing to respond to the listing division's inquiry letter and reminder. He also breached his undertaking to inform the stock exchange of his updated contact details. Given the failures of Mr. Wong and Mr. Liu to discharge their responsibilities under the stock exchange's listing rules, the exchange publicly censured and imposed prejudice to investors' interest statements against each of them for their role in the misuse of the company's funds. The stock exchange also censured two other former executive directors and two former independent non-executive directors of the company for breach of their duties as directors under Stock Exchange Listing Rule 308. Also, in March 2022, the SFC obtained disqualification orders in the Court of First Instance against two former directors of DBA Telecommunications Asia Holdings Limited under Section 214 of the SFO. Considering the background, DBA had been listed on the main board of the exchange since May 2006 and was primarily engaged in the manufacture and sale of telecommunications equipment and in payment services for public utilities, such as prepaid phone cards. The SEC found that DBA's financial statements for the years ended 31st December 2010 to 2012 significantly misstated its financial position, presenting it as much more favorable than was in fact the case. On the 28th of March 2013, DBA published its results announcement for the year ended 31st December 2012 on the Stock Exchange website, which was not agreed by the auditors. However, this results announcement was found to impliedly represent that the financial statements disclosed had been agreed with the auditors of the company, which was not the case. DBA subsequently issued a clarification announcement stating that the consolidated financial statements set out in the results announcement had not been audited or agreed to by its auditors. DBA's board knew that the auditors had not agreed the financial statements at the time DBA announced its results. The auditors had also made clear that the financial statements purportedly disclosed in the results announcement were not agreed and that further audit procedures had to be carried out before they could complete their audit work. On the 9th of March 2022, pursuant to Section 214 of the SFO, the Court of First Instance ordered the disqualification of Mr. Chan Wei Chuan, a former executive director for 6 years, and of Mr. Yun Lok Ming, a former independent non-executive director for 18 months. Under Section 214 of the SFO, the SFC is allowed to petition the Court of First Instance for various types of orders specified in the section where the SFC considers that a listed company's business or affairs have been conducted in a manner which is oppressive to its members or any part of its members, involves fraud, misfeasance, or other misconduct towards it or its members or any part of its members, resulting in its members or any part of its members not being given all the information with respect to its business or affairs that they might reasonably expect, or unfairly prejudicial to its members or any part of its members. The directors were disqualified after admitting that they had failed to exercise the degree of skill and care that they may reasonably be expected of a person with their knowledge and expertise and had breached their duties that they owed to DBA. Mr. Chan was found to have acted in a grossly incompetent or negligent manner since the company's financial position was seriously misrepresented. The statements prejudiced the company's shareholders and the investing public, and fraud was involved. And the misstatements lasted for at least 3 years. Mr. Yun, as an independent non-executive director of the company and a member of the audit committee, was fully aware that the financial statements had not been agreed by the company's auditors. Although Mr. Yun was not responsible for the publication of the results announcement, he permitted or allowed the company to continue to perpetrate the misrepresentation for almost 3 months and failed to cause the company to timely correct or clarify this. Both directors were found to be responsible for the company's business or affairs having been conducted in the manner described under Section 214B to D of the SFO. The next case I look at is the SFC's reprimand and fine of 5.4 million Hong Kong dollars levied on Emperor Securities Limited and Emperor Futures Limited for breaches of anti-money laundering regulatory requirements under Section 194 of the SFO. During the relevant period, Emperor Securities Limited processed and approved over 700 third-party fund transfers, constituting an aggregate amount of over 1 billion Hong Kong dollars, and Emperor Futures Limited processed and approved third-party fund transfers amounting in aggregate to around 17.6 million Hong Kong dollars in each case, without conducting sufficient due diligence to validate the relationship between the clients and third parties, and or the reason for the third-party fund transfers. The transfers involved unverified relationships or situations that might have given rise to suspicion under the Anti-Money Laundering and Counter-Terrorist Financing Ordinance, the AMLO, and the Guideline on Anti-Money Laundering and Counter-Terrorist Financing, the AMR Guideline. The transfers were all made to or from third parties whose relationships with the clients were unverified or difficult to verify, including transfers to spouses and relatives, directors, shareholders, business partners and money lenders, and to friends or colleagues. The transfers raised red flags because they had no apparent economic or lawful purpose and were outside the ordinary range of services normally requested by clients. Emperor adopted a box-ticking approach and routinely processed third-party fund transfers in reliance on the information provided by the clients, without properly scrutinizing whether the transfers were reasonable. Emperor's procedures and controls were not effective in enabling their staff to detect red flags and ensure that suspicious transactions were properly monitored and reported to the Joint Financial Intelligence Unit. It was noted that although Emperor's policy required staff to make telephone confirmations with clients for third-party payments, there were no such requirements for third-party deposits. Further, Emperor failed to provide staff with guidance on the inquiries they should conduct when making telephone confirmations. Emperor's staff admitted that they would simply reconfirm the transaction with clients without making further inquiries to verify the information. The SFC found that Emperor had breached the requirement to take all reasonable measures to ensure that proper safeguards exist to mitigate the risks of money laundering or terrorist financing associated with third-party fund transfers under Section 23 of Schedule 2 to the AMLO and Paragraph 2.1 of the AML Guideline. It had also breached Section 5.1 of Schedule 2 to the AMLO and Paragraphs 5.1, 5.10 and 5.11 of the AML Guideline by failing to conduct appropriate scrutiny while processing third-party fund transfers and diligently monitoring the activities of its clients for mitigating any possible money laundering or terrorist financing risks. In addition, the SFC found that Emperor had breached General Principle 3 of the Code of Conduct by failing to have and employ the resources and procedures which are needed for the proper performance of its business activities, and General Principle 7 and Paragraph 12.1 of the Code of Conduct by failing to comply with and failing to implement and maintain measures appropriate to ensuring compliance with the requirements under the AMLO and AML Guideline. The SFC found Emperor to be guilty of misconduct and called its fitness and properness to carry on regulated activities into question. On the 17th of March 2022, the SFC publicly censured Wonderful Sky Financial Group Holdings Limited and Liu Tian Ni and publicly criticized Liu Kiki Ching Tung for breaching the SFC code on share buybacks with regard to a buyback transaction in the shares of Wonderful Sky conducted on 27th of March 2020. The shares of Wonderful Sky had been listed on the main board of the exchange since 2012, and it's an investment holding company. Its subsidiaries are principally engaged in the provision of financial PR services and the organization and coordination of international roadshow services. Liu is the chairman of the board and CEO and executive director, and is the controlling shareholder together with his wife of the company. His daughter, Kiki Liu, was a deputy general manager of the company at the time. On the 27th of March 2020, Wonderful Sky bought back 42.5 million shares at 0.4 Hong Kong dollars per share, which represented approximately 3.56% of the then issued share capital of Wonderful Sky. The buyback was not conducted in the open market in the stock exchange, but via a block trade, a type of manual trade which is pre-arranged and privately negotiated and executed. This kind of share buyback is allowed under Rule 2 of the Code on Share Buybacks, which says that off-market share buybacks must be approved by the executive before a repurchasing company acquires any shares pursuant to such share buyback. Such approval will normally be conditional on the following: approval of the proposed off-market share buyback by at least three-fourths of the votes cast on a poll by disinterested shareholders in attendance in person or by proxy at a general meeting of shareholders duly convened and held to consider the proposed transaction. An on-market share buyback would not normally have implications for being unfair, as all shareholders would have access to on-market trading and would therefore be provided with an equal opportunity to participate in the buyback. In an off-market share buyback, however, the offer to buy back shares is only available to a limited number of shareholders. The offer is therefore not available to all shareholders, and so shareholders are not treated equally. The off-market buyback of the shares was therefore in clear breach of Rule 2, as it had not been previously approved by the SFC's takeover executive. The SFC publicly censured Wonderful Sky and Liu and publicly criticized Kiki Liu on the basis that shareholders of Wonderful Sky were prejudiced and received unequal or unfair treatment from Wonderful Sky, with Liu as the main decision maker in the off-market share buyback, and Kiki Liu participated in its implementation. On the 29th of March 2022, the SFC banned Mr. Kim Bum Suk, a former relevant individual of BNP Paribas Wealth Management and BNP Paribas, from entering the industry for 27 months. The ban was imposed due to Kim having knowingly circumvented BNP's internal requirements by operating his clients' accounts discretionarily without obtaining their written authorization under the guise of pre-signed client instruction forms between March 2015 and August 2017. Kim also created a false appearance that the instructions originated from his clients by arranging for them to pre-sign blank client instruction forms and risk mismatch acknowledgement letters when he was in fact operating their accounts discretionarily. He also caused the production of false call reports to BNP. Kim was a relevant individual engaged by BNP from 4th of December 2014 to the 29th of March 2018. He's not currently licensed by the SFC or registered with the HKMA. In January 2018, BNP self-reported to the HKMA and to the SFC that a client complained about his relationship manager, Kim, due to investment losses incurred on his BNP account. The SFC conducted an investigation and found that Kim, on the basis of his client's verbal authorization to trade on a discretionary basis on his non-discretionary account, asked his client to pre-sign blank instruction forms in order to trade discretionarily on the client's non-discretionary account for the sake of convenience. He then asked his assistant to complete the pre-signed blank documents with trade details for execution and produce false call reports stating that he had met or contacted the client to give investment advice and/or to take order instructions from the client when he had not. Kim adopted a similar practice with three other clients, asking them to pre-sign blank documents so that he could place trades for their accounts without informing them in advance. The SFC found that Kim's claims that he had client authorizations to trade for them discretionarily through pre-signed blank instruction forms could not substitute for the authorizations required for operating discretionary accounts under paragraph 7.1 of the SFC Code of Conduct. Paragraph 7.1 of the Code provides that a registered person should not affect a transaction for a client unless, before the transaction is effective, the client has specifically authorized the transaction or given written authorization for the registered person to effect transactions for the client without the client's specific authorization. Kim also failed to designate his client's accounts as discretionary accounts and obtain senior management approval to open them, as is required by paragraph 7.1 C and D of the SFC Code of Conduct. As a result, BNP and its senior management had no knowledge of his discretionary operation of these accounts, which deprived BNP of the opportunity to supervise his discretionary trading activities in the client accounts, contrary to the client's best interests. Further, Kim misled BNP into believing that the order instructions given in the pre-signed blank instruction forms came from his clients, when they were made by him acting discretionarily. He also deceived BNP in causing false call reports to be produced to BNP, stating that he had met with clients when he had not. Kim's deceptive and dishonest conduct breached General Principle 1 of the SFC Code of Conduct, which requires registered persons to act honestly, fairly, and in the best interest of their clients and the integrity of the market in conducting business activities. Kim also failed to follow BNP's risk mismatch handling process, which required him, before executing the transaction, to explain to the client that the relevant transaction was not suitable for the client's investment profile and to confirm with the client that they had made the investment decision based on their own evaluation without BNP's recommendation, understood the risks involved and wanted to proceed with the trade. Instead, Kim deceived BNP by asking clients to pre-sign risk mismatch acknowledgement letters, creating the false appearance that the clients agreed to trade in products with risks which did not match their investment profiles, contrary to General Principle 1, paragraph 5.2 of the SFC Code of Conduct. The SFC concluded that Kim was not fit and proper to be a regulated person since his conduct was deceptive and dishonest and cast doubt on his character and liability and his ability to carry on regulated activities competently and honestly. I'll now consider further enforcement actions in April 2022. So let me look at the Stock Exchange's disciplinary actions against Shin Chong Group Holdings Limited and seven of its former directors in relation to agreements entered into between the company and related companies of an executive director of Shin Chong. On the 11th of April 2022, the Stock Exchange sanctioned the delisted Shin Chong and seven of its former directors for various breaches of the Stock Exchange listing rules, including the requirements for notifiable and connected transactions and of the directors' undertakings, including the undertaking to avoid conflicts of interest. In 2016, Shin Chong entered into a sale and leaseback agreement to acquire two properties for $500 million from a related company of Mr. Zhou Wei, a former executive director, under which Shin Chong paid 129 million RMB as the first installment, and a renovation cooperation agreement with another related company of Mr. Zhou to renovate the properties, under which Shin Chong would pay consideration of 247.5 million RMB. Both agreements were subsequently terminated, and the sums paid by Shin Chong were then treated as loans to Mr. Zhou's related companies. These transactions constituted disclosable and connected transactions under the exchange's listing rules. However, Shin Chong did not comply with the applicable reporting announcement circular and shareholders' approval requirements. The transactions were not announced until the 31st of March 2017, and as at the 31st December 2019, when the company was delisted, Shin Chong had not dispatched a circular to its shareholders. The Stock Exchange's disciplinary statement noted that there was no commercial rationale for the sale and leaseback agreement. In particular, the eight-year leaseback allowed Mr. Zhou's related company to lease the properties for an aggregate rent of 203.5 million RMB, which was less than half the purchase price paid by Shin Chong, and Shin Chong was subject to a buyback provision requiring it to sell the properties back to Mr. Zhou's related company for 100 RMB at the end of the eight-year lease. Mr. Zhou was the sole approver of the transactions. He did not notify Shin Chong's board of directors, seek the board's approval of the transactions or disclose his personal interests in them before the company entered into the transactions. The other six directors claimed that they were not aware of the transactions until they were discovered by Sin Chong's auditors when preparing its 2016 annual results. The transactions were raised as an audit issue, and the annual reports for the 3 years ended 31st December 2016 were consequently subject to disclaimer opinions. With respect to the failure of Sin Chong to fulfill the listing rules requirement regarding disclosable transactions and connected transactions, together with its failure to timely publish and dispatch its annual results and its deficiencies in internal controls, the Stock Exchange Listing Committee found that Sin Chong breached multiple listing rules requirements under Chapter 13, 14, and 14A of the listing rules. Further, in respect of directors' responsibilities over the breaches of Sin Chong pursuant to Stock Exchange Listing Rules 308, 316, and 1304, the Board of Directors is collectively responsible for a listed company's management and operations. In particular, Listing Rule 308 provides that the directors must avoid potential and actual conflicts of interest and duty and apply the degree of skill, care, and diligence that may reasonably be expected of a person with their knowledge and experience and holding their office within the company. The Stock Exchange Listing Rule 308 also requires listed company directors to take an active interest in the company's affairs and acquire a general understanding of its business. They are also required to follow up anything untoward that comes to their attention. Listed company directors are also under an obligation under the declaration and undertaking they give to the Stock Exchange to comply with the exchange listing rules to the best of their ability and to use best endeavours to procure the company's compliance with the listing rules. The Listing Committee found that Mr. Zhou had breached Stock Exchange Listing Rules 308 and his direct declaration and undertaking. In particular, Mr. Zhou failed to disclose to Sin Chong his personal interests in the transactions between his related companies and Sin Chong, did not act honestly and in good faith in the interests of Sin Chong and its shareholders, willfully failed to exercise due skill, care, and diligence in discharging his director's duties as indicated by the seriousness of the listing rule breaches. The other six directors were found to have breached their duties of skill, care, and diligence under Listing Rule 308F and their undertakings to comply with the exchange's listing rules to the best of their ability and to use their best endeavours to procure the company's compliance with the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules. The exchange censured Sin Chong and Mr. Zhou Wei, the former executive director of the company, criticized the other six Sin Chong directors and directed them to attend directors' training and made a PII statement against Mr. Zhou. This case acts as a reminder to our directors of their obligations to take an active interest in the company's operations and the use of its financial assets, to safeguard company assets and ensure the company's compliance with the exchange's listing rules, and of their responsibility for implementing an appropriate control and risk management framework. The next case I'm going to consider is the SFC's Takeovers Executive's public criticism of two directors, Mr. Gao Yun Hong and Ms. Feng Shui Lian, for disposing of material assets of Steering Holdings Limited during an offer period in respect of the company in breach of Rule 4 of the SFC Takeovers Code, the No Frustrating Action Rule. Mastervia Holdings Limited, a company wholly owned by Mr. Ng, an executive director of Steering, acquired 49% of Steering shares in April 2021 from CMBC Capital Finance Limited. Steering shares acquired from CMBC were in fact provided as security for a loan made by CMBC to Gentle Saw Limited, which was a company wholly owned by a non-executive director of Steering, Mr. Gao. CMBC sold the shares in enforcing the security for the loan. The share acquisition resulted in the interest in Steering of Mr. Ng and parties acting in concert with him increasing from 4.62% to 53.62%, triggering an obligation on the part of Mastervia to make an unconditional mandatory offer for Steering under Rule 26.1 of the Takeovers Code. Following the acquisition, and while the SFC Takeovers Executive was vetting the Mastervia's draft offer announcement, Steering announced that Mr. Ng and all the independent non-executive directors had been removed from Steering's board. Only Mr. Gao and Ms. Feng remained as directors. On the day after the announcement, Steering announced that Mr. Gao had informed the board that Gentle Saw had commenced legal proceedings against Master Vavel, CNBC and Mr. Ng in relation to CNBC's enforcement of its security over the Steering shares and the sale of those shares to Master Vavel. 2 days later, Steering announced that a new executive director and three new INEDs had been appointed to its board of directors, which then consisted of Mr. Gao, Ms. Fung, and the new directors. The new board met the next day and approved the disposal of 137,740,000 shares in CNBC Capital Holdings Limited, held by JetSpeed Asia Pacific Limited, a wholly owned subsidiary of Steering, with Ms. Fung as its sole director. A week later, on the 13th of May 2021, Master Vavel announced its firm intention to make an offer for the shares of Steering under Rule 3.5 of the Takeover Code, and an offer period in respect of Steering commenced on the same day. On the 14th of May 2021, Master Vavel's legal advisors wrote to the legal advisors of Gentle Saw, Mr. Gao and Ms. Fung, reminding them that any disposal of Steering's assets, including the disposal of 137,740,000 shares in CNBC Capital Holdings Limited, held by JetSpeed, may result in a breach of the frustrating action provisions of Rule 4 of the Takeovers Code. On May 17, 2021, Gentle Saw's legal advisors wrote to the takeover executive to consult on whether a general offer obligation under Rule 26.1 of the Takeover Code was in fact triggered by Master Vavel, given the dispute over the share sale. The takeover executive replied that regardless of the dispute, since the transfer of the Steering shares to Master Vavel had been completed, Master Vavel's obligation to make a general offer had been triggered under the Takeover Code. 4 days later, on the 21st of May 2021, Steering published an announcement authorized by the new board in response to the offer announcement in compliance with Rule 3.2 of the Takeovers Code. On the 1st of June 2021, Steering announced that the 137,740,000 shares in CNBC Capital held by JetSpeed had been disposed of between 27th May and 1st of June 2021, and that the disposal constituted a disclosable transaction under the stock exchange listing rules. Ms. Fung instructed a broker to sell those shares in CNBC Capital Holdings on market and informed Mr. Gao of the sale. On the 15th of June 2021, Steering announced the new board resolutions that the previous resolutions approving the removal of Mr. Ng and the previous INEDs and the appointment of a new executive director and INEDs were suspended as if they had not been effective. Consequently, Mr. Ng and the original three INEDs of Steering were reinstated to its board. Rule 4 of the Takeover Code aims to prevent an offeree company from taking any action which could result in an offer being frustrated or its shareholders being denied an opportunity to decide on the merits of an offer from the time when a bona fide offer has been made to the board of the offeree or the offeree's board has reason to believe that a bona fide offer may be imminent. This rule applies irrespective of whether the offer is welcomed by the offeree. Rule 4 also serves to provide a level playing field for parties in an offer. So let me take a closer look at Rule 4. It says that once a bona fide offer has been communicated to the board of an offeree company or the board of an offeree company has reason to believe that a bona fide offer may be imminent, no action which could effectively result in an offer being frustrated or in the shareholders of the offeree company being denied an opportunity to decide on the merits of an offer shall be taken by the board of the offeree company in relation to the affairs of the company without the approval of the shareholders of the offeree company in general meeting. In particular, the offeree company's board must not, without such approval, do or agree to sell, dispose of, or acquire assets of a material amount. And note 1 to Rule 4 says that the requirement of a shareholders meeting may be waived by the executive if the offeror agrees. Note 6 to Rule 4 further says that for the purpose of determining whether a disposal or acquisition is of a material amount, the executive will in general apply the same tests as those set out in the listing rules to determine whether a transaction is a disclosable transaction. If several transactions relevant to this Rule 4 but not individually material occur or are intended, the executive will aggregate such transactions to determine whether the requirements of this rule four are applicable to any of them. The executive should be consulted in advance where there may be any doubt as to the application of the above. So since the disposal of the 137,740,000 shares in CNBC Capital held by JetSpeed was a disclosable transaction under the exchange's listing rules carried out during an offer period, it constituted a frustrating action subject to the requirements of Rule 4 of the SFC Takeover Code. However, Steering had failed to obtain its shareholders' approval of the frustrating action as required by Rule 4, nor did it seek a waiver of the requirement from the takeover's executive. This is a clear breach of the requirements of Rule 4. The SFC viewed the failure to comply with the fundamental principle represented by Rule 4 of the SFC Takeovers Code as meriting disciplinary action. It took into account that Mr. Gao and Ms. Feng were the only directors on the board throughout the relevant period, and that Ms. Feng was the sole director of JetSpeed. The takeover's executive took disciplinary action against each of Mr. Gao and Ms. Feng because of their substantial involvement in the share disposal and their position as directors who owed duties to steering. Mr. Gao and Ms. Feng admitted the breaches of the requirements of Rule 4 of the code, which they said were due to oversight and their misunderstanding of the code requirements. This case really shows the importance of listed company directors seeking professional advice where their actions may have implications under the SFC Takeovers Code. If there's any uncertainty as to the code's application, the takeovers executive should be consulted at the earliest opportunity. The next case I'm going to look at is the ban by the SFC of Mr. Poon Choi Young, a licensed representative of China Tonghai Securities Limited, from re-entering the industry for 20 months in disciplinary proceedings under Section 194 of the Securities and Futures Ordinance. The SFC investigation found that between June 2019 and March 2020, over 1,000 trades in six client stock options accounts at China Tonghai were conducted by Mr. Poon, and less than 90 of those trades were in fact agreed with the clients. It shows that Mr. Poon had no specific authorizations on over 90% of the total trades executed, nor had the clients authorized him in writing to affect the trades on a discretionary basis. The SFC first found that Mr. Poon breached paragraph 7.1A of the SFC Code of Conduct. Under 7.1A, a licensed person should not affect a transaction for a client unless, before the transaction is effective, the client has specifically authorized the transaction, or the client is authorized in writing the licensed person to effect transactions for the client without the client's specific authorization. By effecting over 1,000 discretionary trades without the client's specific authorization for the trades and or their written authorization for such effect, the trades are on a discretionary basis, Mr. Poon breached the requirements of paragraph 7.1A of the SFC Code of Conduct. Further, under General Principle 2 of the SFC Code of Conduct, licensed persons are required to act with due skill, care, and diligence in the best interests of their clients and the integrity of the market. China Tonghai was not aware that the client had agreed that Mr. Poon could trade in their stock options accounts at his discretion, and the client's stock options accounts were not designated as discretionary accounts by China Tonghai. The SFC considered this to be prejudicial to the client's interests since China Tonghai was prevented from monitoring and supervising the operation of the accounts, and clients were thus deprived of protection against the risk of unauthorized trades being carried out in their accounts. Mr. Poon was therefore found to have failed to act with due skill, care, and diligence and in the best interest of the clients when conducting business activities in breach of General Principle 2 of the SFC Code of Conduct. Additionally, under paragraph 5.1a, a licensed person is required to take all reasonable steps to establish the true and full identity of each of its clients and each client's financial situation, investment experience, and investment objectives. Mr. Poon assisted three clients in completing their account opening forms between May 2019 and February 2020. However, he took no steps to establish and verify their financial situations and investment experience. This resulted in some of the answers relating to three clients' financial situations and investment experience in the account opening forms being incorrect. Mr. Poon also failed to properly conduct the risk disclosure procedures required by the account opening forms. He nevertheless signed the account opening forms, confirming that he had completed the relevant procedures for two of the three clients. It was therefore the SFC's view that Mr. Poon had failed to act with due skill, care, and diligence, and had failed to take all reasonable steps to establish the true and full identity of the three clients and their financial situations and investment experience. His conduct breached paragraph 5.1a and general principle 2 of the SFC Code of Conduct. So that brings me to the end of this presentation. Thank you and have a great evening. Bye.